Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on the award-winning Close Up Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here on the program today. It's also wonderful to welcome a guest who was on our series about 5 years ago. Now, let me tell you, that 5 years went by in a New York minute. Dr. Ada Kennan is here, accomplished much since we chatted last, always has, but she's perhaps best known for her work as a novelist, writing romance novels that feature characters treated unfairly through no fault of their own, or who make self-destructive decisions. Free will is the unknown element. Will they overcome barriers which stand between them and their ability to evolve, accept help from the most unlikely sources, and reach their true destiny? A prime example is her most recent novel, The Blessing, Responsibility to Redemption. It's paranormal in nature. The main character, Ra, is a walking, talking aura that can shapeshift and move from ethereal to human form to carry out his mission in different dimensions. A standalone product in its own right, The Blessing, Responsibility to Redemption, is the first book in the Your Vibe, Now Mine trilogy. The proactive storyline makes it Ada's personal favorite, and she hopes it'll evolve into a television series. In addition to relatable morals, Ada's books feature a lot of vibrant imagery and a raw writing style. She doesn't sugarcoat anything. Writing creatively is quite unique, she says, and it's different than when she wrote reports as a psychologist. The Blessing, Responsibility to Redemption, and all of Ada's books are available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble online, her website, and book signing events, which she does in her Las Vegas home area. It's terrific to have her here once again. Excited to find out some of the latest things that she's been doing. Let's welcome Dr. Ada Kennan, joining us here from Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. Dr. Kennan, thank you very much for joining us once again here on the program. It's a pleasure.
Well, Jim, it's a pleasure to be back with you.
You know, it's amazing that those 5 years went by in what they say is a New York minute.
I can't believe it, but it's true.
That's it. And then, like I said off air, we both look the same. That's amazing, too.
Yes, I'd like to keep it that, yes.
We'll keep it that way. You and I will keep it that way. Of course, you're a popular author, and there's sometimes some sad memories associated with your first published work. Maybe you can share that with our audience and about the experience you went through with your late husband and how it helped you discover the actual writer inside you.
Well, Jim, yeah, you know, before I became caregiver to my husband, who was diagnosed with end-stage kidney disease and got put on dialysis, I was really more of a reader than a writer. It was his suggestion that I use writing as a kind of therapy for myself, a way to process my anger and frustration, and him being denied life-saving medication by both civilian and military insurance companies. His suggestion led me to not only start my own business, which is Sheba Enterprises, but to write that first book, Patient or Prophet, Where is the Love? That book was a nonfiction memoir, and it was really special because he was able to contribute thoughts from the perspective of an honorably retired Army non-commissioned officer. Then after his passing in December of 2019, writing not only filled a lot of lonely hours for me as a widow, but I also found that I was transforming myself from being just a writer into an author, and that I was taking an interest in doing this professionally, with my own original content, and then getting it published. You know, I self-publish my books, and I do use the assistance of publishing companies for things like editing and cover design. But that launched the first phase of my journey, and that was followed by me writing The Niche, Twin Flame Mysteries. And it's really where I find myself today with the blessing responsibility to redemption. The Niche crosses several genres, detective, mystery, visionary, romance, paranormal, as does The Blessing. And The Blessing is the first book in the Your Vibe, Now Mine trilogy.
That's wonderful. That's fantastic. Congratulations on that. You know, one of the most exciting books you published crosses genres including romance and fantasy and science fiction. Maybe you could tell us about The Blessing, Responsibility to Redemption, and all you hope to have it grow into the near future. I think the storyline is very entertaining and probably even worthy of a TV series. I know that would be exciting. Maybe you can share a synopsis of that book's plot with our audience.
Yes, Jim. I've already been contacted by a lot of people in the film industry who want to translate that storyline to film. It pleases me that they call it a breath of fresh air, and they're really excited about how they might bring the setting and the visual effects to life. All the action takes place in Jamaica and a place I call the Heavenly Realm. At this point, I'm looking for just the right match. I really want to partner with a company that will do it justice. Now, the storyline of The Blessing is an interplay of three genres, romance, fantasy, and sci-fi. What makes it worthy of a TV series, I think, is the uniqueness of the storyline, the way it combines the physical with the non-physical in order to understand the true nature of the realities of the characters and the challenges that they face. I try to incorporate themes taken from both science and spirituality to develop the universe my characters live in. When all is said and done, the predominant themes parallel those found in the stories of Adam and Eve and the contemporary version found in movies like East of Eden. For example, there are deities and they're humans, and in that way, the characters differ. However, the non-physical can create the physical, and the physical can impact the non-physical. But in the end, you can't have one without the other. And at some point, they must work together as a united front, despite their differences, in order to prevent their destruction. Another example is that each character vibrates with a level of energy as determined by a skill or an attribute, which is then used to categorize him or her into existing on one of seven planes or dimensions of their universe. And their universe is also bordered by another dimension called the Nowhere. The Nowhere is a place of chaos, and it's home base for all dark workers. Now about the synopsis. The main villain, the antagonist, is Karun, and he's a dark worker, and he's a tyrant with blood-red eyes. He leads the invasion of Sun City. Sun City is home to all light workers and in what I call the first plane or the heavenly realm. All of the deities have supernatural powers that they can use for good or evil. They communicate with words also through their vibes. Vibes are the colors and hues of the layers of the auras that they are. Vibes are the colors of the layers, and they can show different feelings or emotions. Now, what Karun does is to turn the perfect balance of energy found in Sun City into a dystopian society because he outlaws the open expression of feelings and emotions. Now, the light workers retaliate, but their plan backfires, and it plays right into Karun's hands. As a result, a hero is needed to not only save the light workers and restore their perfect union, but also teach them what to do to remember how to empower themselves. And this is where Ra comes in. Ra is one of the two protagonists in the story. I call Ra a sprite, and that's how his existence begins. Now, a sprite is a shapeless cloud of energy, and he tumbles from the eyes of the Almighty, the creator of all that is. That happened in one of the many colonies found in the Second Plain. When that happened, he was immediately placed into the care of a tribe that acts as a grooming place, or sprites, and he remained there from infancy through adolescence. Compared with his peers, his development was uneven, and that caused him to gain a reputation as being kind of a rebel. That disappointed the elders because he showed more of an interest in satisfying his own needs and desires in contrast to service to others. But they decided to give him the benefit of the doubt, hoping he would mature enough to qualify to receive a special blessing above all others during what's called the coming of age ritual. Now, that honor not only marks his transition into full status as a deity with a unique true calling and destiny, but also afforded him membership in what was called a League of Stewards. And the League of Stewards was an elite group of deities formed by the Almighty to create universes and realities. But this special honor would only happen if he proved he was worthy by his deeds and also freely chose to step into and claim the powers given him at the time of his creation. Now, he was eager to gain an advantage over his peers. So shortly before the ritual, an opportunity to do so presented itself, and he traveled to Sun City on First Plane. But it didn't take long before excitement became regret, as he realized that the dream job he craved called for him to work under the supervision of the tyrant Karun. He got involved in a war of vibes, and to reach his destiny, he had to deal with both internal and external challenges. He had to conquer his own demons or let fear and temptation keep him from becoming all that he was intended to be. But before he could do that, he had lessons to learn of his own because he had to awaken in himself what he was destined to teach others. So, with the help from three disenfranchised lightworker deities, he went on an epic quest. He journeyed to the island continent of Jamaica on a planet called Earth, and at that point he entered the body of a human male who became his mentor. That human male taught him how a group of tech-savvy humans worked together to resist the tyrant Karun's vibe so that he could bring what he learned back to Sun City. And here's the first spoiler alert. It has something to do with electromagnetic energy, otherwise known as EMPs. Now, there is a still small voice inside of Ra that urged him to stay the course, keep his energy field intact, not succumb to distractions, because those distractions would cause him to fail. Basically, it urged him to stay on the high road. And while the dark workers didn't know it, what his exact plans were, they suspected something was in the works, and they vowed to block his efforts. They, in fact, read his vibes. They discovered that he was still young and untested, and how easily he was distracted by adventure, excitement, and erotic gratification. Now, that was where the stakes of the war of vibes escalated, because three female characters came into the picture, two deities and one human. And each one was determined to win his attention and pull him away from the path he was created to take. The question became, would he willingly move forward in faith? Would he hear and obey only the still small male voice, the one who already knew he had what it took to do the job? Or would he succumb to the vibe presented by one of the three females? Now, one of them was a young lightworker deity named Lynette. And she was kind of caught up in a happily ever after romantic fantasy. She wanted more than just to be under his spell. The second female was a dark worker deity named Mayette. She's the seductress with her own self-serving passion. And then the third one is a human named Vera. She's a Jamaican beauty. And she isn't sure if her desire for Ra is pure lust, or if she just wants to use him as a pawn for her own upward mobility. Which five would he be faithful to? Because his decision would have eternal repercussions. And here is the second spoiler alert. The final chapters are filled with unexpected twists and cliffhangers that were designed to leave readers speechless. So I'm warning everyone to make sure you're prepared, because jealousy and envy and alliances and secret family ties are going to result in some very unusual revelations.
That is so true.
That's a synopsis.
That is a fantastic synopsis. It's so exciting, too. I know people are going to want to run to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and scoop that up. That is fantastic. You know, you said that everything you've done, oh, yeah, absolutely. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and her website as well. We'll tell you about that in just a minute to get your copy. You've said that everything you've done personally and professionally led you to where you are now. Tell us about your philosophy on the choices that we make in life.
Well, Jim, when it comes to writing, I believe my characters really needed someone with the skills and background I have to write their stories. Now, I kind of believe they chose me because they allowed me to develop them. Now, in order to appreciate that, you've got to understand that, as my husband in heaven with wings would put it, yesterday is a canceled check, tomorrow is a promissory note, and today is cash, so spend it wisely. I think that's a good foundation upon which to build a philosophy of life. I try to stand by it as much as possible in my own life, and also when it comes to working with my characters. You know, I write across multiple genres, romance, crime, mystery, suspense, sci-fi, paranormal, and so on. But even so, service to others over self and a desire to address social injustice not only drive my storylines, but they also play a key role in how my characters want me to develop their personalities. These are things I understand, because I come from a long line of strong women of color who were educators and social activists. And also working for 31 years as a psychologist and counselor, that served me well in training me to understand how to bring out the character's uniqueness in a way that makes their profiles compelling. My characters are all faced with problems that require decisions to be made, and those decisions result in consequences. They start at one place and hopefully finish at another place. How they handle those challenges determines if they grow, regress, or stay put. If they have no regrets, or they can smile and say, well done. Each one has a purpose, conflicts, a backstory. Each one has a life. So everything I've done professionally and personally lets me understand all those things about them, put everything together into a profile that readers will appreciate and maybe even relate to.
And that's very important. The relatability part is essential. What do you hope readers would take away from your work? Is it about love and human connections, personal dilemmas?
Well, that's a good question. I think it has to do with where I get my ideas from. Some come from things and events I've experienced, but mostly from ideas that just come to me. Yeah, I like to think that they come from a higher force. They kind of cause a stirring in my gut. I start writing, and they start really writing themselves in my head, and they won't let up until I write or type them. As a matter of fact, when I'm actively involved in the writing process, I find I have to have paper and pencil around me at all times. I mean, it can hit me when I'm driving the car and I have to have my recorder on so I can record something and then come back to it at a later point. I really have no control over that. I believe I work as a part of a team. I'm really the human part who can impact this physical world in a way that the other team members can't. Now, having said all that, the bottom line about all of my writings is that there are hidden messages and morals. And they are just not entertaining, but hopefully ones that readers will understand and appreciate and actually be able to apply to their own lives in some way. I don't believe in coincidence. I believe things happen for a reason. And that's why I'm really pleased that this conversation we're having today about the blessing is happening so close to Christmas, because the blessing is in many ways a story about the Christmas spirit. True, the story doesn't include anything about snowmen or Santa Claus. But it is a story about taking the high road, about faith and victory over despair, love, forgiveness, and joy that comes with service to others over self. And isn't this what the Christmas spirit is really all about? So that's what I hope that my readers are going to take away from my work.
The Christmas spirit is about that. Yes, it is. And it's important to remember that, too, as everybody's out shopping and cooking and baking and doing all the things they're doing. We've heard that Rav, the blessing, is a shapeshifter. Can you explain what that is and how he can move through different dimensions? Also, he is first and foremost an aura, and you did a lot of research about auras before you wrote the book. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, the concept of a shapeshifter is, it's very ancient, and really it can be found in all cultures all around the world. A shapeshifter has the ability to physically transform into another shape, for example, into another human or into an animal. Now, in this first book, The Blessing, all of the deities are shapeshifters. Their true ethereal forms are auras, shapeless waves of clouds and energy, but as they mature, they can assume any form when necessary. Ra travels through what I call portals from one dimension to another. So when he travels to Jamaica, he does so as a bright violet and lavender flash of light that races across the night sky. Now, he maintains his form until he can partner or enter the body of the second protagonist, and that's the human male named George. George's body serves as Ra's protective gear while he's out of his natural environment on a higher dimensional plane. Very much like the wetsuit and breathing equipment of a deep-sea diver would wear to survive underwater. Ra can experience everything George feels by opening portals between them and absorbing energy. Now, that's foreign to him at first, but as time goes on, being in George's body helps him not only independently label what he feels, but understand what he's feeling and then make it his own. Now, about auras. Have you ever been in a room when someone walks in and you immediately feel the climate change? You've just tapped into their vibrational frequency and reacted to their vibe. You've sensed their feelings and emotions or their energy. Your aura has come into contact with their aura, and that affects both you and them. Now, with the exception of a very few gifted people, the auras can't be seen by the naked human eye. But if you could, you would see how it radiates certain colors or combinations of colors depending on your mood and your vibration. It's really an energy field that surrounds your body from head to toe, and it extends outward for several feet away from your physical body. It has many layers, some lighter or darker, some murky or clear. Those variations indicate specific or dominant aspects of your emotional state, your spiritual well-being, and your personal power. Now, as it pertains to the deities and the blessing, characteristics like height, hairstyle, eye, skin color, those are all enfolded within the layers of the auras that they are and may or may not be visible as they desire. Now, these characters can speak with words, but they don't have to. They prefer to read or tap into the energetic information of their auras, because in their dimension, speaking is not that efficient. What they like to do is to use telepathy more so than spoken words. Now, the layers of an aura have colors and also hues, and hues are shades of the main color. Each layer of the aura is said to be represented by a different color. Hues are specific properties about colors. I want you to think placement on a color wheel. Hues give a color its name. The hue you see is largely determined by the frequency of the light waves that end up interacting with your eyes. As an example, there are many different names for slightly different reds, like magenta, pink, burgundy, candy apple, rose, ruby, and so on. But each of these colors resides in the red area of the color wheel. Now, colors and hues, auras radiate different meanings. you heard, of course, possibly the term chakra. A chakra is an energy center or a portal in the energy field where energy is concentrated. Now, Jim, would you believe that many people really don't know that the planet Earth has a number of chakra centers, like Mount Shasta in California or the Great Pyramids of Giza in Egypt? Now, as it relates to humans, there are 7 main chakras, and each corresponds to specific glands or organs or facets of your being, like your heart chakra, or your throat chakra, or the top of your head, and many minor ones also located along the central line of your body. I want you to think a whirling, wheel-like vortex through which universal or cosmic energy can flow into and out of you. That's what I mean when I talk about, you know, this kind of thing. Now, it's important to understand that chakras and auras are intertwined. And I say all of this because in the second plane clan Ra comes from, the elders pride themselves on the ability to control the display of colors, hues, and energy flow. To do otherwise would suggest a level of immaturity. Ra is still learning how to do all of this when he first arrives in Sun City. For example, in Chapter 10, when Tarun, the tyrant, knows he's caught him in a lie about his credentials, Ra gets embarrassed, and he can't control what he shows to Tarun. Blushes of bright yellow retreat as faint pulses of gray washed over colors and hues that define his magnificent layers. In Chapter 6, Ra and the deity Lynette are standing close to each other, and Ra kind of finds himself reacting to the anxiety she feels about meeting Karun, her employer, for the first time. The rich, bright violet and lavender blue layers of his own energy field become dingy and a little gray. His muscles tightened. His stomach churned. It was hard to breathe. Unsure what to do, he stood there in silent agony. He had no name for it, but the elders in his colony had spoken of a time in the distant past before the cleansing, about something called feelings and emotions. There was one they whispered about in particular. They called it fear. He wondered, could this be fear? What is she afraid of? But as the story unfolds, and by virtue of his experience in George's body, Ra begins to mature. When he's getting ready to leave George's human body, Ra shows George what he wants him to see rather than what he can't control. That's why in Chapter 39, when George asks Ra to show himself to him, what he's shown is a shapeless cloud of energy with rich layers of bright violet. They're boiling, they're flashing, they're swirling in and out, round and round. Within it, a male form well over 6 feet tall with emerald-green, almond-shaped eyes, jet-black coils, beard shaped into a perfect curve at his cheeks and square jawline, creamy golden brown skin touched by a lavender blush. At this point, Ross beginning to show the kind of control that signifies wisdom and understanding of his true self and how he's connected to others. Now, that's the vibe of service to others over self-interest. That's not where he starts, but it's where he must finish in order to step into his destiny and claim it.
That's amazing. That really is. If folks want to learn more and they want to order the book, what's the best way they can do that, Dr. Kennan?
Well, if they want to learn more about it, they can go to my website, adakennanauthor.com, certainly amazon.com books. It's in paperback and ebook form. They can use the ISBN number at any bookstore, place an order. And I'm also available for book signings and book club discussions.
That's fantastic. Congratulations on everything, and so happy for you since we chatted last, and I hope we get a chance to explore some more and hear more about your extraordinary work. Thanks so much for stopping by the show, Doctor, and a blessed holiday season to you and your family.
Well, thank you so very much, and to you too.
You be well. You take care. Dr. Ada Kennan is our guest. Here's the website. I'll spell it out, A-D-A-H-K-E-N-N-O-N, and then the word author, closeupradio.com. Jim Masters here, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, right here on Close Up Radio. Thanks so much for being with us. Stay tuned. I'll be back in less than 30 minutes with another extraordinary guest here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, take care and be well. And thanks for joining us on Close Up Radio Live.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.